follow-up. Was there some pure input, that input from some stakeholders, especially the National Association of Broadcasters, their legal concerns in terms of constitutionality, which I hope also must have been discussed during this panel, because they had raised those concerns last time. Without wasting their foreign time, they have not come to me directly to run off the broadcasters who will introduce the current delegation. And therefore, also, the departments are also introduced themselves to the delegation. And then we can then resume with our business of the day. Oh, just before I give it over to my Director General, let me just make a note of some apologies from our members here. We've got an apology from Honorable Umaro, who is attending his other Portfolio Commission communications. And we also have an apology from Honorable Professor Muhammad, who is on the screen. Those are the two apologies that so far we have received. Thank you. How about you?
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Member, Distinguished Deputy Chairman. I've got myself technology today. I've got a careful geography on my left. He's one of the chief directors responsible for infrastructure in the energy protection area of the DMT. And on my right, the fellow is the fellow who is the head of the university. And on his right, we have Makula, who is also the director.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity to respond, I think, to the issues that were raised at the previous AGA meeting of the chairman. What we propose to do in the next 10 minutes or so to share or to remind you of the key issues that were raised at the high level.
Can you also attach this other microphone, because when you face this side, you lose the...
So we want to touch on the issues that were raised at the previous hearing, just to remind ourselves what they are. Probably keep them at the high level. We'd like to touch on the legislation and the regulations that might be proposing to deal with that in the form of the stakeholder forum, and therefore we'll share a little bit of what happened out of that meeting last week. The issues that were on the bill that some of the stakeholders felt belong to the mandate of the CARPA. So we'll try and share how that will be addressed and probably respond to some specific issues that were raised during the public hearing, specifically by some of the companies that felt they would be affected by the operation of the hearing. The issue that were raised was that there was a feeling that maybe we did not consult sufficiently with the stakeholders. And as I said, there were issues with the people felt that they should not be in this field, they should be dealt with by CARPA or in consultation or encouraged with CARPA to go through that in detail. That some compensation on technology change requirements as a result of the operation development of the companies that will be affected by the. Now, on the consultation, we had a meeting last week, which we call a stakeholder. this report to talk about this highlight of the stakeholder forum session last week. But at this meeting, it was agreed that the effectiveness of this regulation advisory committee will be held at the end of September. And then the announcement of the next stakeholder forum meeting will then be made by the end of September. And then the SKA affected parties will conduct South African Square Kilometer Array Project Office to conduct case studies for technology. Now, on high level, in terms of related issues, we've agreed to explore ways of implementing a moratorium on new radio communications transactions with the CASA. And then the CASA will continue to work with the Department of Science and Technology and the SKA Coordinating Office, sorry, the SASKA Project Office, to assist in the process of continuing with the radio frequency interference measurements that would be required by the International Hearing Commission. And then we've also agreed on the participation or the content of the participation in the regulation. At this point, what I would request is that Dr. Sepp would be able to use the meeting and highlight what they have been doing. For a meeting and then request the selector to go through the detailed issues that the hearing and how we propose to our
tribunal. Before you continue, I thought that this audit organization is with you. I see only because you're smart people, so we can't really conduct a hearing when we do not know who is among us. Okay, I would request that other people who are here also introduce themselves because if the things that have to do with public hearing space is now very sensitive, so we want to know who is here.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Bonisam Jojo from the Office of the Chief State Law Officer, the Principal State Law Officer.
As I'm aware, we have also other stakeholders here who also should introduce themselves. Let's let start from there. That's like,
thank you, Chair. My name is Cecilia Matalake. I'm a parliamentary regular driver. I am Elise Hananon from MTN.
David Fox, MTN.
Itumeleng Warani, Vodacom.
Martin Mahal, Vodacom.
Good morning, everyone. Smith from Telkom.
Let's get back there.
Jonathan Fokker Telecom.
Across the
I'm Caroline Kutzer from the Pollination Monitoring Group.
I'm Caroline from Leota.
General Bowman from Cell Telecom.
normally changes if I'm not complicated.
Good morning, my name is
Adrian Cimelco from the Department of Communication. Good morning, my name is Dima Gabo from Czech Operational
Association of Broadcasters. Thank you for representing care. The atmosphere is better now, we know who is here. So it's a good sense if we do not know who is here. Yeah, I think we are also taking this opportunity to introduce our members of the committee. Myself, my name is Obanjobo, the chairperson of the committee, and the member of the traditional Congress. And with me, I've got my secretary here, Selma Hansen, the money worker, the debate, and Sandokan Singarisha. Our eight members starting from the front here.
Could you introduce Ferro from the Democratic Alliance?
Fatih Marshay from the Democratic Alliance.
I think Barbara Hollis, a member of this committee, and also the Association of the Energy from ANC.
Barbara Hollis from Rapo, member of this committee.
ANC member of this committee from ANC.
Jacob Yando from ANC and member of the committee.
Tilda Di Cheve from the committee ANC.
Beatrice Nova, member of the committee ANC.
Thank you very much, okay, we can go ahead.
Thank you. We'll ask them to just give a highlight of the stakeholder forum.
Thank you, Chair. Essentially, there were three key issues that we discussed at the stakeholder forum. One was the case study to reach technology and other solutions for radio astronomy. The second one was the formation of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Regulation Advisory Committee. And the third one was the amendment to the actual bill. In the first instance of our case study, we had a presentation from the South African SKA project office done by some petite lady. And he presented technology solutions for case studies that were done before. Now, the whole intention and aim of the case study is that it would speed the development of regulation. So what then happened to stakeholders were again invited to contact the South African SKA project office to do this case study and try and come to a technology solution. The second issue that was key as well was the formation of the Regulations Advisory Committee. And as my Director General has just said, there's an indication from a number of stakeholders to participate in the Regulation Advisory Committee. And the intention is that there will be a meeting for the end of September to develop template recommendations, submission agreements of it, and a way plan. And the third key issue that was discussed by stakeholder forum was the actual amendment to the bill itself. And that from our division today will be done by the
Thank you, Chair. As already indicated last week, we had the consultation with a number of stakeholders and we came up with the following. We did not agree on each of the aspects of what we as the department and decided we need to come and present for this comment. The first aspect related to the number of definitions in the bill, relating to radio frequency interference and fixed radio frequency and interference. So, a number of stakeholders felt like the definition was just too broad and it makes it difficult to determine the extent of the interference that is required for the limit to the interference. centrally in a bill, they directly extend the opportunity hearing, but this can be done through regulation. And the forum that we've spoken about in the Solaris in coming up with this regulation. There was also a concern around the definition of core central and coordinated autonomous advantage area. The input that we received was whether we really define this concept. We solicited some input from the stakeholders, but we couldn't get any. And our decision that we stick with the current definition, and unless someone comes up with a better definition, because none of the stakeholders could give us a better definition. The next point is on the fixed radio frequency interference for the certain words with the radiated power, which should not have been included in the definition, and we agree that we would remove it from the definition. Another definition was for mobile radio frequency interference, so that we need to remove the words in brackets. The one is and rooftop telecommunication installation, so we agree that we would remove the phrases from the definition. Telecom reservations are about the definition of astronomy device. Our response to that was that section 28 will be amended to allow the concurrence of the CAS and the Minister of Communication when such an astronomy device is declared, such an installation or equipment or declared to be an astronomy device. There was also a concern around the distinction between declared activities and identified activities. And these items contained in section 23 and 24. Our view is that section 23 deals with central and core areas, and that section 24 deals with coordinated areas. And there was an general understanding that the distinction is just confusing, and it should be that. One area of major concern was section 4 of the bill, which says in the case of conflict between the current bill and any other legislation, the current bill will take precedence. We then suggested that as a solution, where aspects which fall within the constitutional mandate of ICASA are being regulated. ICASA then needs to be involved, that ICASA must communicate together with the Minister of Communication. The sections mentioned about sections 9, 7, 9 and 11, there were members who wanted to be rather stakeholders who said they need to be registered as permanent stakeholders, I mean permanent interested and affected parties. And their view is that it does not seem that they would be registered. But in terms of section 42 of this bill, which allows the Minister to publish notices in the government gazette indicating intention to declare certain areas, and in that process it will calling up for interested parties to come forward and also have themselves registered as affected parties. And we believe that there would be a stakeholder involved in the process and be registered. The sections 8, 10 and 12 make provision for the Minister to withdraw certain declarations of either core central or coordinated areas. There were members, stakeholders who were of the view that the Minister cannot just withdraw a declaration without specifying the reasons or circumstances under which the Minister may do so. We then suggested that we will amend this section to make provision for a non-exhaustive list of the circumstances under which the Minister can withdraw a declaration. And this would be included in the bill.
Sorry, just
quickly,
what does non-exhaustive list mean?
Essentially means the list where you are not mentioning each and every reason or circumstance under which the Minister may withdraw, because there are instances where we may not foresee some things that is basic, the minister will draw in declaration. So we're saying you will list those which we know of. But if there are unknown ones that may occur in the future, then the minister should be able to do so. There was also an issue raised around lack of consistency in the definition in section 16 and section 16 and 1. Because in section 16 we had removed person, but in the definition section there was reference to person. The intention was that there should be no person, but we did not remove it in section 1. But we instead then agreed that we need to include juristic person in section 16 and also in section 1, so that if the minister were to want to appoint somebody as a management authority, he or she must not only be confined to institutions that are listed in the bill, that the minister should be also be able to appoint a juristic person, either that being a company or any other form of an institute that is not necessarily a public entity or a state organ. Members also, the stakeholders also raised the concern around the management authority, not the possibility of the management authority not being transparent, consultative, and that it may be not being non-discriminatory. In terms of section 16.2, before doing anything within their mandate, the management authority must consult all the stakeholders. So we are of the view that they would need to be transparent and also be non-discriminatory and consultative. A number of stakeholders have concern around them being prohibited or restricted from accessing the core or central area. Because in the heading of section 20, there was core and central, but the intention really was that such a restriction or prohibition should only apply to the core area. And we will then accordingly amend section 20 to only restrict or prohibit unauthorized access to core areas only. This aspect raised in section 22 is similar to the one that was raised in section 4 in as far as our base proposed supersedes is concerned. And the stakeholders were concerned that you are going to supersede ICASA and you will obviously that these aspects are actually regulated within the mandate of ICASA. Our view is that we will then, as a solution to that, propose an amendment to section 22 to allow for ICASA and the Minister of Communications to concur in as far as the decision of our minister affects the constitutional mandate of ICASA. There's also a concern around section 22C, which deals with radio frequency spectrum restriction. And I think Telcom suggested that we insert the underlined word so that we are not regulating any transmission or broadcast that comes from outside any of the surrounding areas. And we concurred with the opposition. The above mentioned base deals with certain restrictions that the minister can impose. And the stakeholders were of the view that they may in the process incur some expenses or losses as a result of some of the regulations that the minister can come up with and all the restrictions that the minister can come up with. For example, when they have to migrate from digital, should be digital to analog. Was it correct? I'm not very scientific, just I'm told it's analog. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. There may be also people who may have actually made some investments and they may, as a result of certain restrictions, not, I mean, you can't expect.
Thank you.
then proposed as a solution to this challenge that said the provisions of Section 25 of the Constitution broad enough to possibly include the deprivation of property. This basically means that if any of the stakeholders are for some reason, that they've incurred expenses as a result of the implementation of the scheme, then they would have to prove that there was a deprivation of use of property. And I know most people tend to say that Section 25 of the Constitution deals with land, but it doesn't necessarily deal with land or deal with property in general. As long as any stakeholder can, or any person can actually prove that they were deprived of the use of their property as a result of the implementation of this scheme, the Constitution, if they meet those requirements, then they should be compensated. There was also a concern around the extent to which public participation process is allowed, because there are some members who said like it does not extend to Section 23.1 and 23.2. But the proper reading of 23 of the older Section 23 does indicate that subsection 3 of Section 23 refers to subsection 1 and 2 of, and therefore the public participation process would also apply to the whole of the issue. Stakeholders also were concerned around the 60-day period that is given to the competent authority to either issue an exemption or a request for an impact assessment report. They said that this was rather too long. Our view is that there are so many things that could happen in the process of considering a request or considering issuing an exemption, that the 60-day period may sound very short for external stakeholders, but it may actually not be sufficient. And we're saying we need a 60-day period so that the competent authority must be able to apply his or her mind properly. The concern also raised around Section 25 is to the appointment of a person in good conduct and uses impact assessment. Because the Act is not clear, it doesn't specify what would be the criteria for appointing that person. And we agree that we will set a section, a subsection that provides for the criteria through regulation for the appointment of such. In terms of Section 28, there were some people who said that the initiative rather recommend that there must be public participation process when dealing with declaration of autonomy devices. And I said earlier on, Section 42 would also be made applicable to Section 22. That is when then amend Section, I mean, just like in Section 23, Section 42 should also apply in respect of HEPs under Section 22. Section 35 deals with railway and certain electrical works. There was a view that the management authority must consult before prohibiting certain activities in, around railways and electrical works. And our view that it does actually, currently as debate, it does provide for consultation process before the commencement of any construction of certain railway or electrical works. And we are of the view that there's no need for Section 42 consultation in this regard. Some stakeholders, in particular, Telkom, was of the view that the national standards and measures must be limited to declared astronomy areas, and we also agree that we will confine ourselves to the declared astronomy advantages. Section 41 actually states that the minister may follow a consultation process that he may consider appropriate. And some members felt like this may then mean that the minister does not have to consult. But if you read section 41, it says subject to section 42. And section 42 deals with the consultation process. So it means if the minister were to decide whether or not to hold a particular consultation process, he would still, or he or she would still have to follow the consultation process in terms of section 42. There was also a concern around the minister's power to issue regulation in the use of radio frequency spectrum, because the some stakeholders felt like this was within the auspices of CASA. We then suggested that we would rather agree that we would amend the specific section to allow for the concurrence of the minister responsible for communication in CASA, in as far as that affects CASA's constitutional mandate. And also in the process, section 42 will also apply. There was an issue around what exactly is meant by material financial implications, because it becomes difficult to determine when a particular regulation, if you come up with a regulation, the regulation says if there are material financial implications, then our minister needs to consult the Minister of Finance. Now, there was some people felt like it becomes difficult to determine when it's something from material financial implication, and we said we would rather than leave all material and be left with financial implication, which means as long as there are financial implications in the regulations that the minister is to come up with, then the Minister of Finance must be consulted. There was also a view that in section 2.1 and 2, there was a confusion, rather a duplication, because we actually made reference to suggest that the offences are regulated in subsection 1, D, and C, when in fact it should only be in 1, C. And we said then we remove such reference in subsection 1, D, as offences are actually listed in subsection 1. And we then delete subsection 2. Thank you, Shagata, for my presentation.
Thank you very much, Karma. I think that, before I allow this house to interact, where you felt that there was stakeholders that raised concerns and you felt that it was going to happen the other way around, did you find compromise with them, or are those issues still to be revisited during the course of these committees?
There were certain areas we could find compromises, but there were certain areas where we felt like it would defeat the purpose of the whole thing. But I believe that even while taking the bill through to the office of the state, Lord Biden, there could be certain issues that we still have to attend to in the meeting before the bill is finally brought to you as a different version now for your consideration. And those changes, if any, will be reflected in the bill.
Okay, thanks. Right, members, I think that the board is in your court now. Here is the response of the department in terms of what you requested of them. And I think that if you have any input, concerns, or questions, clarification, they are at your service.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks indeed to the DG and its team for a very comprehensive presentation on issues that we dealt with in our previous meetings. And indeed, they have made attempts to deal with the concerns both of members and other stakeholders in a very innovative and practical way. However, Chairperson, there still are some concerns on my part. And this is really with regard to the conceptualized role of the customer, as it were. Constant reference is made to concurrence between the Minister of Science and Technology and the Minister of Communication and the CASA. And implied in that is that CASA is a body that's an equivalent, to make an example, of the South African Post Office, which falls under the jurisdiction of the Minister of Communication. Now, ICASA may very well take a stand in execution of its constitutional obligations, different from that of the Minister of Communication, because it is not a state organ. It's a state entity, it's a constitutional body that promotes democracy. So, it is not necessarily answerable, constitutionally and legally speaking, strictly so, to the Minister of Communication, because it may, within its broad mandate and powers itself, contradict the Minister of Communication if certain executive actions that she takes are in conflict with the broad mandate of ICASA as defined in the Constitution. So I would like that to be unpacked, because with all the good intentions to try and provide an innovative solution to whatever issues or glitches that may arise, this unfortunately may confront us in future as a constitutional problem or crisis of sorts. And may I just draw the department's attention to the fact that today, too, the Parliament will be receiving a report from the ad hoc committee on Chapter 9 and associated institutions, and ICASA is one such body whose brief, for as long as it has been in existence, since 2000 in particular, I think, with the formation of the IDA, the merging of IDA and etc., that role has been reviewed, and I think there is no doubt whatsoever that it is not, you know, just like any other body that is accountable to a member of the executive, in this instance, the Minister of Communication. So the last point that I want, question that I want to ask, Chairperson, is this body, and again, it's a very innovative way of trying to overcome difficulties, that's informed with all the stakeholders, the National Association of Broadcasters, Telcom, Transtel, etc., with a view to concocting something around regulation. Strictly speaking, in terms of the separation of powers, isn't that going too far? Good intentions notwithstanding. To invite bodies or persons that ordinarily would not play a role of the sort that is envisaged in this stakeholders forum, particularly with regard to regulations. Regulations emanate from the law. The public has that liberty of participating in making the law. But can we stretch it really to regulations? And again, I'm not saying we must close our minds to innovative solutions. I'm just saying the legal people in the department, if they could think of it that way, so that we're not just full of good intentions, but legally speaking, we may have a problem later on.
My thank you, Chair. Mine is
small point which I need clarification on. What was referred to as section 22.2b and 23 and 27, this relates to the reimbursement of operators in case of where the minister has made a decision and there have been expenses incurred to the operator. Now, what I need to know is whether provision is made clear on future operations. Because once this law comes into effect, one would not want to find a situation where these operators go on to put infrastructure without consulting to find out whether that infrastructure may be terminated as a result of the minister's intention, future intention, and thereby we then end up with cost. So what I'm suggesting here is that if that is not in the bill, we should actually state clear that in case of future operations that need to be affected by the operators, the operators must first contact with the department to find out whether there are no intentions that might actually cause that reimbursement later. But for now that the law is coming while people are already in operation, I would be very happy with that compensation. But we shouldn't create compensation for the sake of compensation in future. Thank you.
Yeah, I think those are the questions from members of Professor.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe not all of this is clear to me. I seem to get the impression that lots of conditions are made to regard some of these things. And I really like to want to know to what detriment to the solicitor's and to competitive ability. Outline issues that may be detrimental to our competitive ability to win this. But I get the impression that I haven't studied it carefully, that the concessions are mostly to Tata and structure to that. Could you correct me or tell me in what way Tata, in what way any,
that this will affect the competitiveness of our system? Yeah, thank you, Professor. I just from this address, I also on that there are some slight lack of clarification on the reparation in terms of consultation and the section 41 versus the subjection in section 42. I didn't get it clear there why the other was right when the other was also. I saw some speak-up of conversation, but I just want you to clarify me that you said there's no need for consultation because there is consultation subject to 42, section 42 and so forth. Because, yeah, I just want you to clarify now that particular question. You can respond, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Section 41 says, if you look at subsections 5, 7, 9, and 11, they say the minister may designate certain areas as either core, central, or astronomy. They would like to say, I want an identity these are the persons that I hope identify in the area. Now, it says if you issue a lottery in terms of those sections that I mentioned, but now I'm referring to 641. If you issue notices of your intention to identify certain areas, you can choose the process that you want to follow as the minister. But whatever consultation process that you want to follow, you must do so subject to Section 42. And Section 42 says you must hold a public consultation process. It does not compel the minister to consult, but actually doesn't say to the minister you must specifically follow this process, but you can decide which consultation you think is appropriate to follow. But if you do so, you must do so subject to Section 42. That's what I'm saying. Section 42 would apply anyway, but with some changes, but you still have to have a consultation process.
That was a big change. Okay,
can I respond to a few questions? So that question was with regards to the concurrence of the Minister of Communication and Culture. And what Honorable Chair said is actually true, that we need to try to distinguish between the constitutional mandate of the culture and the role of the Minister of Communication. We would, while discussing the bill with the state government, also look at what becomes the consent or concurrence or consultation of the Minister of Communication requires. And if you go through the whole deal again and also the relevant legislation, you are also seeing that you do not need the concurrence of the Minister of Communication or even consultation of the Minister of Communication, then you change the bill accordingly. So that it does not constrain the role of CASA and that of the Minister of Communication.
Actually, at that section, I was thinking that. I think that it is right as court accepts that if you say and or, then I think it solves the problem.
The other question that was also raised by Honorable Chair relates to the role of the forum that we are proposing, that is assessing the drafting and inputting on regulation. Our view is that we are actually using them because they are people that expertise in the areas of the regulation that we want to come up with. But the decision as to the final outcome of the regulation would still lie with the GST. And it does not necessarily mean when you consult them, you consult them at an initial stage to say you can make your input. But we're not going to say that the regulations are finalized before we involve members of the public. In any case, even if we were to draft the regulations ourselves without involving these stakeholders that we propose in the forum, we would still have to publish the regulations for their comments. So it's basically speed up the process of finalizing the regulations. There was another one around the reinvestment, around whether or not, I'm not sure that the minister has responded. Okay. On whether or not there are provisions made in the bill for future operations. I do not think the bill does make provision for future operations, but I think what it does is to say, if an area has been declared and the minister has prohibited certain activities, then it means we cannot have future operations in that area. The last question.
I will also give the opportunity to the stakeholders present here to ventilate their opinion. Not for now, let's leave the department set to also exhaust the questions and the response from members. Processes. But it's not for
the blacks is just to say we were focusing that we should also say to the department, let's do that, so that when you come back to us, we can again sit down together to see whether there will not be any conflict in the future.
I still do not see the line of argument, because you see, if I say that Honorable the Chair has a constitutional mandate to oversee this, and Honorable Mohammed is a minister who also is responsible for a certain piece of legislation that has to do with this. And then I come myself and I say I am the Minister of Science and Technology, and I am proposing the legislation in this respect. And then I say that where there may be a conflict of interest between me and the Minister of Communication, I will then have a consideration and everything like that. I will then go to the Minister so that we compare on that particular level. Now, if on the other hand, I see that what I'm doing actually here, what I've designed in the actually, it has to do with the functions of the TVS and the council. And then I go to the TVS and say, listen, I want you to do this. Can we conquer? Because this is important in this and that respect. You see, and the TVS says, well, it's fine, they have you do it this way, provided to do it this way, because this is my mandate, you can't do it the other way. And then we agree with them. So I think this is the spirit of concurrence. In cases where there are conflict of interest, where the minister feels that he wants to design a certain area, but probably according to regulations governing that particular area, the ECAS has got to be involved, and it's the one which has already the regulation of how that thing should be done. And the minister has to go to ECAS and contact the ECAS until they consent. So, which is what the other thing is in that clause, that they will have to consult. I think the only problem is that they have used AND. That's right, that if they have used AND, then it's a problematic, because it's like, there will be, because there will be a situation where actually ICASA does not necessarily feature, it's the Minister of Machine, or where in fact the Minister of Communication doesn't feature, but ICASA does feature. So, and so putting it as end on, or sometimes both they will be featured before, and the Minister must contact with both of them before he can do anything. So I think that within that reason, myself, I therefore think that one has that the minister in such special circumstances, he has to compare with the CASA or the Minister of Communication. I don't know. I think that should be sufficient. But let's listen to the state law advisor what they think. Can you make a comment on that aspect? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, before that, I just want to, on this point, I just want to take the others to comment.
You want to comment on the section in clause 41 of
the one that was of concurrence.
You got a point there, Chair, when you put it in that manner, in the sense that really the department will have to consult where there is a need to consult and get the concurrence where they are conflict of interest. Not forgetting the fact that the bill seeks to protect an identified advantage area. It is not regulating the broadcasting, which is the function that is given to the ICASA as an independent body. So the bill, as it is, seeks to protect an advantage area. That is the thing that we must be mindful of. It is not a sort of a regulating broadcasting. Section 192 of the Constitution talks about the broadcasting in the public interest. And ICASA is silent about any other thing. It only concentrates on the broadcasting. And the bill, if there are interests that are affected by AGA which are not intended, then it's when they can get a concurrence with the affected parties and discuss how they come about and sort of reaching a compromise on that. The crux of the matter is that the AGA protects the advantage area, not regulating broadcasting.
I will entertain any follow-up if there's anybody who feels fully addressed on that aspect. Let me allow the two members here who want also to attend.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a bit of concern about, you know, the aspect of concurrence when there could be words used that, you know, determine that the minister has sole authority, as you talk about in 22.1. And that in a sense, to me, contradicts exactly what, you know, what the concerns is of the members. Because if the minister has sole discretion and authority within the confines of the area, and yet the CASA has the role and function of allocating frequencies across the country, somewhere along the line, the use of that word is going to now create some sort of problem, as I see it. And I think that is the key crux of the matter.
I
think it's just a matter of terminology that, you know, that within the broad context of the independence and the role and function of the Chapter 9 institution, which is established in the Constitution, to allocate radio wavelengths across the broad spectrum of the country, and yet within that there's going to be a confined area which now the minister has the rights and control over. We need to ensure that somewhere along the line that is actually catered for in the wording here, because you are now giving sole discretion, you know, within that sort of confined area. So I think that, you know, it's a matter of determining how you're going to express that in such a manner that it doesn't become an unconstitutional issue when it does, it's tablet, you know, challenge in terms of that frequency. So I think it's just wording that really needs to be read. And I think 22.1 is clearly, you know, one of the chapters that under chapter part 3, the restrictions that need to be determined in conjunction with the CASA, just to make sure that there isn't a conflict.
But how do you hope that there could be any constitutional challenge when they have content?
Then, you know, then the actual area that is going to be determined has to be completely withdrawn from any role and function that a CASA has. In other words, you take the frequencies and all the required, you know, wavebands that are going to be used within that restricted area outside of the present confines, which might mean a constitutional amendment, unfortunately. But, you know, because at this stage they have a broad mandate across the country. So I just think it just needs a little bit more thought. I read, you know, and I apologize because I haven't been at all the hearings, but, you know, just going into some of the submissions, for instance, from the, and I had a brief talk with the National Association of Broadcasters, their, you know, concerns about the bill in terms of their opinion really highlight some of the issues that I think need to take place, you know. And it's not only limited to radio and TV, you know, it's across the board, including the telephone communication channel.
But I'm aware that actually they were very much advocating about the concurrency with the CASA in terms of so that's why I'm saying this, where would the conflict be then if there is concurrency from the CASA. But without having any dialogue, we will come back to that. I have Mr. Blanche, and after that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, great way of resolving conflict with in-laws before you make them outlaws is always to say to them, are you satisfied with what we're doing? And my experience has shown that if you have a portfolio committee has a problem of this nature, and that party is not here to give us their opinion, then we ask for their opinion in writing to say, do you concur? Are you satisfied with what we're going to do? And thereafter, if you like the one to be dissatisfied, whatever holds your peace, because we've now written it into the law. And we're trying to make a law that satisfies the in-laws and the outlaws. And I think that's probably the solution we should look at.
And one of the suggestions and proposed reform is picked up is the what I was referring to as some sort of proportional allocation, which you actually withdraw out of the current broad allocations of wages across the cap or frequency, that you actually take out where that particular area is going to be declared, and that proportional amount then falls under jurisdiction. So you can segment it, I think, in some sense like that, and that might be one of the solutions.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think, first of all, let's get this right. The broad mandate of ICASA is not only with respect to broadcast, it's also with respect to telecommunications, because the line between the two is very tenuous these days. I mean, you can watch a podcast on technology, entertainment, design from Monterey, and what then is the role of ICASA? If you get on your internet, you can listen to a radio on internet and so forth. So what I'm saying is perhaps that is somewhat insignificant, but to the extent, for instance, that all laws that we have passed into the country have gone through the correct channels, public hearings where necessary, the legal departments of various departments that are hearing before us, etc., the state law advisor, even the legal people in the presidency before the president attends to them when necessary. It's such an exhaustive process. And to the extent that there is no constitutional challenge to those laws, we presume them to be not in conflict with the Constitution, because remember the Constitution says any law or conduct that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid. So in the same manner, if the two ministers try to reach some consensus between them with regard to provisions of this particular bill, and ICASA now, as a regulatory authority, doesn't see anything wrong with that, because they must have interest in any matter of this nature. And right up to the point when we pass this into in Parliament and it becomes an act of Parliament and nobody questions the constitutional validity of this bill, then it's presumed to be not in conflict with the Constitution. So we cannot with certainty predict that it is going to satisfy all the constitutional provisions. So we've passed well over 800 pieces of legislation in this Parliament since 1994. And it is only at the point where somebody says, but this particular piece of legislation, to the extent that it deprives me of this freedom or this right, is unconstitutional. And maybe at that point, will the Constitutional Court only say, well, amend, like it happens with the our own traditional marriage act, etc., so as to provide for the so-called civil union legislation. So I'm saying that let's take care of all those processes, but let's not anticipate too much. The role of ICASA, in spite of what we think, will always be a regulatory one anyway. That's their responsibility, that's their constitutional mandate. So I think Honorable Nicola Vorder has covered that, and I think Honorable Faro too. So maybe if we could close it there. So the end or part, I don't think quite done. Maybe let's allow them to deal with that demon in the detail, and we'll come back to it. Sure.
any, oh, I thought this idea that planned you have in chapter
Yeah, I think but the Honourable Kachebe suggested that the details should be worked out between the Department of the State Law Advice, so we should rather do that.
Right, we have
just
at that point so far then upgrade to. I will then allow the other stakeholders, if they have got any points they would like to raise at this juncture.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of points. In response to a couple of points raised, the first one relates to the Honourable Member Viteva's comment regarding ICASA perhaps acting contrary to an executive order by the Minister of Communications, where she may have concurred with the Minister of Science and Technology in terms of regulating radio frequency spectrum, for example, in a AAA. What we have, obviously, in terms of legislation, has been mentioned earlier this morning, we cannot envisage every eventuality that may arise. What we have in the ECA is the right for the Minister of Communications to issue policy directives in relation to matters that fall under communications and ICT. Those policy directives will then instruct ICASA to issue regulations consistent with those policy directives. I think the nub of the Honourable Member Dutebe's point was where the Minister of Communications, in ICASA's view, may have acted ultra vires outside the scope of her powers in terms of the ECA, for example. And therefore, ICASA, in its own interpretation of the policy directives, would say, we believe the policy directives issued by the Minister are ultra vires. Therefore, we as ICASA are going to issue regulations contrary to them. Obviously, where the Minister obviously acts ultra vires, ICASA would issue contrary regulations. However, I think the premise that we have to start from is that where the Minister acts within the scope of her powers or intra vires, ICASA will issue regulations consistent with that. And I think that dovetails on the latter point that has been discussed in terms of the concurrence of the two in a AAA. Say, for example, the point that's made by the Honourable Member Farrell, in terms of if the Minister, in terms of the constitutionality of this particular bill, where ICASA has a constitutional mandate in terms of, to regulate the ICT sector, and then in terms of the Electronic Communications Act itself to regulate radio frequency spectrum for the whole country. And then we see this bill envisages giving the Minister of Science and Technology the power to regulate radio frequency spectrum in AAAs. And I think we can, a way around it is that where we find executive concurrence between the Minister of Science and Technology with the Minister of Communications in terms of how radio frequency spectrum should be regulated in a AAA, the Minister of Communications will thereby issue a policy directive to ICASA, instructing ICASA to deal with radio frequency spectrum in a AAA that is consistent with the policy direction, which has already been agreed with the Minister of Science and Technology. So I think there are instruments within the ECA, i.e. the policy directive that the Minister of Communications can issue to instruct ICASA to manage radio frequency spectrum in a manner that is consistent with this particular bill, where the Minister of Communications has concurred with the Minister of Science and Technology in that particular respect. And I think a lot of this is, you will find in the last pages of the submission, it's the legal opinion given by Ms. Matsubake. And I was hoping that she could, you know, speak to it and amplify some of these points, because in reading the last few pages of this opinion, I think that the questions that have been raised in terms of constitutionality and the concurrent jurisdiction issues are addressed quite succinctly in this particular opinion.
Okay, then it solves the problem, because they are the employer advisors who have not been mandated to deal with this. To find common ground with the department, so it solves the problem. And also, it is a very good input that you have made to clarify the interaction between the Minister of Communication and the CASA in terms of being within the control. constitutional mandate of the TCAS. So I think there are no other problems as this probably way over exaggerated. Right. Is there any further input from the floor, or are we saying that we are now exhausted? If so, then there's one stakeholder there.
Thank you, Chair. Just maybe a comment from my side. During the public hearings, this House requested DOCOM to make additional inputs, and we have done so, and we have sent that through to your office yesterday. Unfortunately, it was only yesterday, so we would appreciate if you can have a look at that and maybe also pass that on to the state law advisor as requested during the public hearings.
Okay, I'm sure the duty of my secretary when such information lands on our desk to submit it to all relevant people here within Parliament, including the legal advice. Thank you very much. I saw the input actually. I usually am in Parliament until 2 o'clock in the morning, so I was able to read it. Yeah, at this juncture, allow me therefore to thank the department for the effort and for really keeping up their promise that they made last time to the committee that they will in fact convene the relevant stakeholders and try and find common ground within this controversial issues of this year, and I'm very happy that they have done so. It shows progress. In fact, the sooner you finalize this, the sooner also we can pass and put this legislation together. I'm hoping now that you see, it seems, as I said before, that when we have done sufficient state work, and the work is very, very easy here in Parliament. As you can see now, we have finished well before time because there are no colleagues who have discussed with the stakeholders and they are here for everything. In fact, I've got more positive inputs today than last time. You see, and that is exactly what we were advocating here last time. So, with that, I think that you've done a very good job and you deserve a vote of gratitude in that respect. And I also thank the stakeholders also for their cooperation to make this legislation speeded up so that even the international community can count on us that South Africa is already ready for this, and so why not that we give them the number one go ahead? I think we will remember ourselves if this project goes along that we were the one who made it possible. So I think we should be proud of that. Thank you very much. We will have lunch. We will have our lunch at about 12 o'clock. We can still make it in the All Assembly Hall, the dining hall, and everybody is invited to partake of the lunch with us. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.